If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? Hey, what's up, Life Creation Nation? Jeremy here, and I have a very special guest with me today. He is the co-founder of Quest. He is on the board for the XPRIZE, and he also is the only other person I've heard that thinks in movies. Welcome to the show, Tom Bilyeu.
Thanks for having me, man. It is an honor to be here.
I love it, man. I have followed you for a long time, following everything you do with impact theory, and I'm excited to have some fun today, man.
Nice, me too.
So the big thing I like to start out with, because I think we have a lot of different ways we do this, but when somebody asks you, what do you do? How do you introduce yourself?
That used to be a lot easier than it is now. So in the past, it was very easy. You know, I'm the co-founder of Quest Nutrition. In the beginning, nobody had heard of it, but at least I could get people the genre of what I did. And then obviously as it grew, you know, it became, oh, I think I've heard of that. And then it was, oh, I've definitely heard of that. And then it was, I have six of them in my bag right now. And so that was very easy. Now that I've transitioned into a founder role there and I'm doing impact theory full time, it becomes a little harder to explain. And I actually don't think that's a good thing. That's something that I'm focusing an inordinate amount of energy to really explain to people super succinctly what we do. And basically, it's we're trying to impact the next generation of entrepreneurs through the creation of traditional media. And then it's married to social media as well. And that's like where it starts to get really complicated. But I read a book called The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell. And to your earlier point about thinking in movie terms, he was the guy that helped George Lucas really give Star Wars a powerful foundation of mythology. And he has a really great quote that's influenced my life tremendously. And he said, if you want to change the world, change the metaphor. And that's what we're trying to do.
That's awesome. For you, what's been like the biggest way you've been trying to change the metaphor? That's a really interesting concept.
Well, the grand play is to use traditional narrative. So think comic books, movies, TV shows, novels, and video games, using those forms of narrative to ingrain in every aspect of culture globally, ideally, to see the transition from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset as like the hero's journey. And that's something that I think has never been detailed as much as it could be, certainly in a modern context, in a modern way. And then backing that up with the social commentary that becomes possible through social media. So really showing people how you can extract information from those traditional forms of narrative. Because right now what's happening, and this is going back to Joseph Campbell and The Power of Myth, he said the big problem that we have in society is people know that the mythology, which historically was how you communicated ideology, it was how you instructed people on how to live, people know that they're just stories, and so they dismiss it. And what's happening is that's robbing ritual of all of its power. People aren't able to transmit this ideology very well. And now we're living through this exciting time where people are turning to social media. They're turning to connecting with individual human beings to learn from them. And I think that's really powerful. But humans are narrative machines. And I recently encountered a guy who he wrote his doctoral thesis and is a neuroscientist. He wrote his doctoral thesis on the fact that the only way for humans to assimilate truly disruptive information is through narrative. Mm. And he's backing that up with all of the cutting edge science of what they're able to see through brain imaging. And so even before I had heard that, that was my intuition told me that that was true. And so that's really what we're trying to do is bring those two things together and help people change the physical wiring of their brain by assimilating this disruptive information that we think we can impart to them through traditional narrative.
That's an amazing concept because I know for myself, I was a history major going through school. So like everything we've passed through, you know, human history have been these stories and these narratives, and that's what people connect with. And I know Gary Vaynerchuk has talked about it recently, that one of the big things missing in the entrepreneurial narrative right now is they show the guy when he's not doing well and they show him when he's doing great, but they don't show how that connection happened, right?
Yeah. And that, so Gary is a fascinating guy, and I cannot encourage people enough to go check out what he's doing. He's really pioneering this whole industry of the personal brand. And I've recently signed with Vayner Talent as one of their sort of guinea pig clients for personal branding. And I just really, really believe in its ability to show that in between period, to show people what it takes to transform, to really push through that evolution. And it isn't easy. But that's the juice, right? Like, right. Once, if people can figure that out, if they can watch that, if they can see it socially and see it reflected in traditional narrative, and traditional narrative is always going to condense it down and make it entertaining. It's got to be entertainment first. But if you can marry those two and really show on both an intellectual and emotional level, which that is where traditional narrative really comes in, it's so good at wrapping things in emotion, then I think people will really begin to understand what it takes to transform and become capable of more.
Well, and I think that connects actually really well with what Gary said about how every company now is first and foremost a media company. And that's actually something you've put a huge amount of attention on what you've done.
No question. Yeah, he's right on the money about that. And people are always asking, you know, how did you grow Quest as fast as you did? And we went from not existing to being valued at over $1 billion in less than 5 years.
Wow.
And the real answer to that was the precursor to personal branding, which was just understanding that companies need to be media companies. But there's a reason for that, right? And the reason that you need to be focused on media is we live in an era where people demand to understand the people behind the company. They want to know what you stand for. They want to know what it means to use your product. And the level of transparency and authentic connection that is possible and is increasingly important has just been totally transformed by social media. And it's, you know, goes back to that notion of we create the tools, then the tools shape us. And that's what's happening is social media made it possible for this, and then it's demanded it. So it's really interesting. It is, in my opinion, it is the most exciting time to be an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, let's go back to your superhero origin story. You know, a lot of people see you now with Impact Theory. They see what you've done with Quest. But how did you get to be this guy? Like, what was that story like for you?
It's an inordinate amount of falling on my face, embarrassing myself, like being terrified and feeling like, you know, I'm going in the wrong direction, and just constant, relentless self-assessment. And that is literally like the transition from having a fixed mindset, believing that your talents and intelligence, it's innate, it's fixed, there's nothing you could do about it. And life is all, you know, a game to see how often you can put yourself in a position where you just naturally shine, right? That's where most people live. And that's why their lives are smaller than they could be, because they're just trying to be in a position where, hey, I look good. And so they don't want to be challenged. They don't want to do the hard things because they're afraid of embarrassing themselves. And, you know, we have all this neurological wiring. You know, they say that the human brain exists in three levels: the lizard brain, which is sort of the most evolutionarily old part of your brain, then the mammalian brain. And then on top of that is the neocortex, the thing that we think of as making us truly human. But the lizard brain, man, its job is to protect you. It is to keep you nice and safe, but it doesn't always try to get you to shine or to do amazing things or to push your skill set. You know, so understanding that, and that isn't just a metaphor, like that's really how your brain is layered. There really are three separate structures. And so once you understand that and can begin to put some rationality around, okay, my heart is racing right now, I'm having anxiety, and that is coming from that lizard brain that's trying to keep me safe from something that's potentially even just socially dangerous,
right?
Right. Not wanting to be ostracized from the group. But I have the neocortex and I can overpower that, and I can do things to really calm myself down. And, you know, I won't go into all the mechanisms, but they're utterly fascinating and people should go learn about it. The brain is just super, super interesting. And once you realize that you can take control of all that stuff, then you really can begin to transcend that, to get control of your life and to, you know, execute at a much higher level.
Absolutely. And for you, what were some of the biggest tools of that transition? Because I know a lot of people listening are like, you know, how do I make that transition? Like, what should I be looking for?
All right. So I'll give you, first of all, read the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. That is like the starting point. And that talks about how you go from that fixed mindset of believing your talents and intelligence are fixed to a growth mindset where you realize, wait a second, I can take control of this. I can change it. I can realize that I can develop any talent, that I can actually even increase my IQ, which most people believe you can't, but you can. And so once you do that, then the next one is, what do you build your self-esteem around? Because everybody needs to feel good about themselves. And you have to find a path to feeling good about yourself that is productive. And most people build their self-esteem around being right or being smart. And those are super fragile because, I mean, think about being smart, right? So I am not like on a just raw horsepower performance on an IQ test. Like, I'm not going to score off the charts. And I was routinely encountering people who are smarter than me, and it made me feel badly about myself. So I constantly like avoided that and tried to be around people that I was smarter than, because it's awesome, man. Like, to be quite frank, like, it feels really rad to be the smartest person in the room. And, you know, people are going to tell you, oh, like, if you're the smartest person in the room, then, you know, you're in the wrong room. And that is so true. But what nobody's talking about is being in that room feels amazing.
Wow.
Like, when you're in that room and like, especially if like, they're like some cool people. It's not like you're with 12-year-olds. There's some cool people. They've done neat things, but you're like just a little bit smarter. That is an addiction that people really get sucked into. And that is certainly where I went. So I realized, okay, wait a second. This is not helping. Always trying to be in the room where I'm the smartest person is not moving me towards my goals. So I knew what my goals were. I knew what I wanted. I knew what I was trying to accomplish. And it was just becoming patently obvious that in always trying to be the smartest person in the room, always trying to be right, fighting for an idea, even when I knew it was wrong, just to prove that I was right, it was just so dumb. And it was really moving me away from what I wanted. So I thought, okay, I need to feel good about myself. What can I build my self-esteem around that will at all times move me forward? At the time, I didn't have the words, but now I use the word anti-fragile, which comes from the book Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb.
You're giving us like a whole reading list on this show, Tom. I love it. This is awesome, man.
Oh, dude, for sure. And look, books changed my life. So I'm like so hardcore about reading. And I actually have a reading list, if I can shamelessly plug that.
You absolutely can find it.
ImpactTheory.com. We've got the, I think it's 25 books long. But yeah, so read, you know, changing the mind. And so what I ultimately ended up building my self-esteem around that is truly anti-fragile is identifying the right answer faster than anyone else. So now it was like, I wasn't afraid to admit when I was wrong. I wasn't afraid to look stupid because I didn't build my self-esteem around that stuff. I wanted to pride myself on my willingness to stare nakedly at my flaws, to look at the areas where I wasn't right, to admit faster than anyone when I was wrong. So if I'd been like 2 minutes before fighting doggedly for an idea and then realized I was wrong, I would just like admit as fast as I could, nope, totally wrong. I should have listened to you guys. You're right.
Wow. That's a really big deal. Because I know for myself, that's something I really struggle with, being like a, I guess, self-proclaimed smart guy. You feel like you want to be in that position. And it's hard to realize that if you are not finding people that you can get things done better than yourself, you're never going to grow. Like, that's a really big thing that I had to learn in my own business.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let me ask you this, Tom. I know social media has been, like you mentioned earlier, huge for Quest. And how did you use that to build a tribe? Because I think a lot of people are trying it, but they're not really doing it correctly. Like, what's work for you guys?
It does boil down to really three things. One, knowing the ecosystem that your product serves. That's a big deal. So, you know, who am I actually trying to help? Whose problem can I make go away? And then the other two are authentic connection and transparency. And that's the real juice. And so our thing was, we didn't want people, like, even now, so I'm in the personal branding space, right? You would think I want it to be all about me, but I don't. I want it to be all about the community. And once people feel that, it's what we called at Quest mirror marketing. I wanted people to see themselves. I wanted them to feel celebrated. I wanted them to know that we were there to support them. And that's the same thing at Impact Theory. It's like, we're all about the community. We're trying to help people be better entrepreneurs. We're trying to help them have breakthroughs in terms of how they create their self-esteem and how they alter their mindset and the skills that they acquire. But at the end of the day, it's not about, hey, look at me, I'm cool. It's about, all right, I fell on my face all the time. I embarrass myself routinely. Like, here are the things that I've learned that you can really short circuit this path. And when the audience feels that that's totally authentic, that you're really doing that because you want to see them win, then like you'll start skyrocketing. And it's been really amazing to see. So what we did at Quest from just a growth perspective was nuts. Community grew fast. Company grew by 57,000% in our first 3 years alone. And we're seeing on the community side, we're seeing that same kind of growth at Impact Theory. It's just nuts because it's all about the community.
And what did that social growth look like for you guys? Like, what was that looking like on the back end?
We never ran the like percentage month over month growth, but right, we hit the 2 million mark probably by year like 3, maybe year 4. So it was fast, very, very fast.
It's awesome. I've noticed too, Tom, like with employees, because I think a lot of business owners, when they're expanding, that's something they really struggle with, is handling employees properly. And that's something I've noticed you seem to talk about a little bit differently than everybody else. And to the point even saying that you want them to be so good that they could almost take your job. Like, what's been your viewpoint on, you know, number one, what do you look for in an employee? And then once you have them, what's it been like for, you know, them working with you?
So there's three things that I look for in anybody, and that is grand ambition, because honestly, otherwise I'm going to seem crazy to you. Mm-hmm. And I find that people that don't have grand ambition just find me very frustrating, because I'm always looking to do something big. And then if we start getting close to that goal, then I just move the goalpost and now we're looking at something even bigger. And there's a certain type of person that loves that. And then there's another type of person that not so much. So grand ambition is one. The next is drive, because I'm not interested in empty dreamers. It really is. To me, drive is the willingness to go out and acquire the skills that you need to actually execute against your dreams. And then the third thing is compassion. And I just think that caring about other people, having deep empathy, wanting to see other people win, those are the things you need to really be a good team player. And businessman is a team sport. And when people don't get that, it just creates all kinds of strife. And so I've always tried to protect against that by just hiring for people that already have that deep compassion and that deep sense of empathy.
It's interesting too, because I've heard you talk about something called a confession, where you basically try to get the person to be really real with you in the first few minutes of talking to them. Like, has that been something that's worked for you in hiring or just in personal relations?
No, I use that probably a lot more in hiring than I do in personal relations. Yeah. So what I would say is, look, I want to get you to lower your guard. And I just find that one of the ways to do that is to, you know, really reveal something about yourself. And I'm not going to ask you to do it first. So I'll tell you something about myself. And my go-to, it wasn't the only thing that I ever used, but my go-to was, I legitimately want to be a Jedi. And that usually got people, you know, to laugh. And I'm like, look, I'm not interested in wielding a lightsaber. That's not the part that appeals to me, but really gaining control over my own mind, which is to me the most powerful form of mind control, is what, like, that's the core tenet of my life. And understanding the brain and understanding persuasion and understanding that, you know, hiding in the mythology of the Jedi is a willingness to turn inward, to find intuition, to, you know, not need technology, right? One of the most powerful moments in Star Wars Episode 4 is when Luke realizes, like, stop trying to defend against that little ball that's shooting the lasers at him and just feel it. And he puts down the blast shield and he can no longer see. And that's when he finally does it. And then, of course, he does the same thing when he ends up destroying the Death Star, where he shuts off the technology and just, he feels it. Now, if you know Bruce Lee, you know that that moment comes from an inordinate amount of practice. And when you take it out of the sort of obscure realm of the narrative and you really make it about the, one of my favorite Bruce Lee quotes, where he says, I kick until I don't think kick, I just kick. And I love that, right? Like, you practice something so much that the mind-body connection is there. And so when the time comes to use that kick, you can really get into a state of flow. You don't have to think about it. The prefrontal cortex is shutting down. And that's one of the markers of a state of flow, is where things shut down, right? So flow isn't a higher level of activity. It's actually dampened activity in strategic areas of the brain.
Absolutely. I'll say too that there's that one scene too where Luke is hanging upside down in the cave in Hoth and you see him close his eyes and pull that lightsaber to him as well.
Right. Exactly. You just gave me the chills. Well said.
So I'm interested to find out too, because I always look at this with people that manage and run big companies, Tom. Like, do you quantify staff production? And if you do, like, how do you do that so that you can manage it?
Yeah. I mean, you have to quantify things. It's often hard to quantify down to the individual. Maybe if you're their manager, you could also have, you know, direct things for them. But the position that I was in, it was always about departmental.
Right.
So what's like in social, beware the vanity metrics, but look at metrics that actually help. So the difference between followers and likes versus, say, reach, right? Interaction. Those are way more interesting than just the top line stuff. So the top line stuff is easier to quote, but it's not necessarily the most important. And so really trying to identify the things that are most meaningful to you hitting your actual objectives. And at the end of the day, you know, the final objective to any business is profitable revenue. And so really understanding how all of these things drive profitable revenue and always trying to get closer and closer. And that's the transformation that's happening right now in social around back-end metrics is beautiful. And you're going to very soon, I'll say in the next maybe 12 to 24 months, the level of traceability that you're going to have in social is going to jump exponentially. And, you know, with the bigger companies getting behind this, having access to deeper analytics is super, super critical. And that's something I'm really excited about, because when you're trying to build your business and you have like this huge blind spot of like, I know intuitively that social is working. I know that it's working because of transparency and authentic connection, but it's like, how do you quantify that? Like, how do I know that people are clicking through, especially when you have something like Instagram, right? Where it's like, the best you can do is click the link in my bio. So it's like finding tools that allow for a higher degree of traceability is critical. Getting new marketing firms like VaynerMedia, who are obsessively tracking metrics, and not vanity metrics, but like real meaningful metrics, like what's important to your business. And then we'll do everything that we can to impact that, to track that. And even when there's not a direct back end correlation that we can draw, we'll still steer by it. So that kind of stuff is critical, just identifying what is actually important.
Well, that's huge too, because there's so many, like, I guess, quote, big accounts out there that have like zero interaction. So that's, it's not really worth it for anybody in that way.
Totally.
So Tom, how did this transition to impact theory work for you? And where are you looking to take that in, I guess, the next 6 to 12 months?
So that was all about, you know, when I got started at Quest, my goal was, how could I help my mom and my sister be happy? And it was always about the mind, and wanted Quest to really be about 360 degree wellness. So body and mind. And then it became so successful that it was clear that we had trained our audience to see us in a certain way. And it's very, very hard to break out of that. And so rather than put the brand through the turmoil that is trying to sort of flex its what it means to people, I thought it would be just super simple to spin the studio that we had created inside of Quest out into a standalone company. And that's what Impact Theory is. So I see the really two bookends of my entrepreneurial career being that, the body and the mind. And, you know, I'm looking at not just what we're doing here at Impact Theory, but all the companies that I'm mentoring are in the space of the mind, and, you know, how we can help people further improve that. And I think Quest is going to continue to just smash it. And I think ultimately the end destination for that company is to be one of the largest and most important food companies on the planet. And, you know, the mission behind it is just, is so incredible. And I'm such a believer and very much consider myself the chief evangelist for the company. But what we're trying to do with Impact Theory over the next 6 to 12 months is, in that short of time frame, it's really about building community. And the reason we want to do that, and I don't know if you've seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which happens
to be the first one and the second one.
I apologize for the second one. First one was amazing. My wife is Greek, and so that literally was our life. And we got married when the first one came out. I still can't believe that there's a movie called My Big Fat Greek Wedding that came out while I was going through a big fat Greek wedding.
That's awesome.
And in that, there's this great line where she says, "The husband is the head, but I am the neck." And that just really, really stuck with me. And that's what social media is. The community is the head. They will always be the head. You do not get to tell the internet what to do. And the people that follow you and evangelize for you, like, you serve them, period. And once you understand that, and you understand the power that you have as the one aggregating those people, is that you're the neck. You can't tell them what to think, but you can tell them what to think about. And there's just an inordinate amount of power in that. And so that's what we're trying to do. And we're going to leverage that to, you know, build the ecosystem that I was talking about with the traditional narrative, which will be crowdsourcing. And we're currently building this layer of technology over our community to gamify the interaction, to make sure that they're incentivized to, you know, be submitting ideas to us. And we want to facilitate making those ideas real and have the social content that is the commentary on them, so people understand how to extract into the real world the information that's contained in the entertainment. And then, you know, monetizing the merchandising opportunities that exist in that ecosystem. And whether that, you know, what I'll call merchandising is a video game, an app, or a t-shirt, to me is irrelevant. There's always an ecosystem that grows up around ideology. Absolutely. And Disney understands that, I think, better than anybody else. And, you know, really, Impact Theory was me asking the question of what would Disney look like if it were founded today? And I think it would look like what we're doing.
That's a huge point, though, because like you said, they have, you know, Disney World, Disneyland, they have this, the whole Disney video universe. So that's a really big goal, Tom. Like, how do you set a goal that big? Like, how does that happen?
For me, I have an obsession with scale, and everything starts with belief. So you have to believe you can. So the moment you can look at yourself, or this is literally what I did. So I remember hearing one time, one of the Imagineers that worked with Disney when he was just beginning to conceive of Disneyland, said, you know, Walt would stand on a hill and he would wave his arm and say, over there, you know, in this grand gesture, I want, you know, whatever, Tomorrowland. And he said, whenever he waved his arm, I knew it was going to be tens of millions of dollars. And I just thought, okay, to have the guts to say, I make cartoons, but I'm going to build, you know, this insanely expensive thing because I so believe in it and I so know that it's going to impact people and it's so the right thing and people are going to respond to this, that I'm going to take that kind of risk. Like, it just took so much belief. And then to see what ends up becoming of it, and he makes one of the most impactful and biggest companies on the planet, and it's really endured for decades and decades and decades. Like, to be able to say, I could do that, or I could do it even better. Right? Like, you have to have that belief in yourself. So first of all, I just believe in myself. Then once you believe in yourself, then it's like, you just have to understand the fundamentals of execution. And that's partly why I believe in myself. The other part is I know that belief has to come first. So even when you have no earthly right to believe in yourself, you have to find a way to do it.
Yeah.
So I have that. And then I've spent the last 15 years just focused on execution. So I know at the end of the day, I'll be able to figure it out.
I think that's a huge point, though, because so many entrepreneurs are just, they think big and that's great, but they can't execute. So I think focusing on execution is a big, big thing. Have you had anything that's helped you to execute better and execute more often?
I think the real thing is, one, I read obsessively. So I'm constantly getting introduced to other people's ideas. I try to read things that are outside of the world that I'm in. So I'm not just reading about, you know, books on entrepreneurship. I'm reading books on how the human mind evolved and how culture evolves. And, you know, I watch movie reviews and The Nerd Writer. If you don't know who that is, like, just go dive deep into his world. And, you know, trying to get introduced to things that come from outside, which I think cross-pollinate and create a much more diverse and interesting worldview. And then, you know, just, I'm not afraid to be wrong. And so I'm willing to try something knowing that, yeah, this might fail. Like, Impact Theory could implode. Okay, like, fine. Like, I'm not worried about that because I know that I'm going to learn something from that. There's a great book, I think it's by John C. Maxwell, called Sometimes You Win, Sometimes You Learn. And that's my life motto.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, we're running a little low on time and I don't want to waste too much of your time here, but I want to transition a little bit into you as the entrepreneur. What would you say is your biggest skill set and how did you develop that?
My biggest skill set, I think, is A, what I've done to my mind. So my frame of reference is incredibly useful. Like I talked about with what I built my self-esteem around, my willingness to look at my flaws, my willingness to learn from other people, that I'm always trying to be a student. I fear becoming a master. It's like there's all these beliefs that have really served me. I've codified it into what I call the 25-point belief system. And so, you know, that's what I've had to do to my mind to be successful. And then, you know, a willingness to fail and learn. Like, those are the real keys to being able to execute and get where you want to go.
What role has mentorship played for you in your business journey?
It's been huge. And, you know, I always credit books and authors as my most meaningful mentors, but I'm trying to turn just about anybody into a mentor. I think everybody has something to teach you if you're willing to learn. And I don't mind what some people perceive as the embarrassing posture of sitting at someone's feet and learning from them. I love that. And I've actually found, like, for people out there that, because I've struggled with anxiety, for people that struggle with anxiety, I will just tell you, fascination is something that has just been a huge, huge thing for me. And when somebody triggers fascination in me, I get so excited to learn. And so cultivating that in yourself and fanning those flames and not trying to look cool, but instead really, really letting yourself be engrossed by what somebody has to teach you, I think has been a huge win for me. And I think it will serve a lot of people.
Awesome. Well, Tom, what does the next 6 to 12 months look like for you? It's something our audiences always like to hear. Like, what are the busiest people in the world have going on in the next year?
So for me, it's really head down on impact theory. There's two elements to that. There's the side that I've already talked about, which is building the community. But then there's also the business side. You know, we're having high level meetings with some of the biggest studios on the planet to just, you know, I'm trying to leapfrog. So explaining to them what we're doing, how we're going to be leveraging crowdsourcing, how they can participate in that. We're looking at getting the rights to some dormant properties, which I think would allow us to leapfrog the model because it'll allow us to show people exactly what we mean by creating traditional narrative, starting at the sort of low expense side. So think about a comic book. So building universe of storylines. Part of the promise that we'll make to content creators that submit ideas to us is, you know, that we'll have these relationships. So doing that, and then also incubating just traditional startups. And we're involved with a couple right now. One of them is a medical device company. And so just in the nitty-gritty weeds with them, you know, raising money, how do you build a business? Is the product real? Does it actually work? All of that stuff, and just highly tactical, really boring, the kind of stuff I refer to as the banality of being an entrepreneur, which is something nobody thinks about, but you got to do a lot of boring stuff if you want to build a business. And so just being head down in that, being willing to put in the work, do the reps, not just do the flashy stuff, but really get in there and figure out what's important to the business. What does the P&L look like? How much burn do we have? Where are we going right with the marketing? Where are we going wrong with the marketing? And really just evaluating it all, looking at analytics, living in the data, like, that's so important.
I'm blown away by what the next year sounds like for you, Tom. That's a lot of stuff.
It is, man. And the team here is so unbelievable and just honored to have them. And you can do so much more as a part of a team than you can by yourself. So while I'm often the one talking, this team is everything.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, we're about to come in for a landing, but before we do, are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Let's do it.
You are selected to give your commencement speech. What's your topic and why?
Escaping the matrix, because it's the most important thing you can do.
Awesome. Red pill or blue pill?
Gotta be the red pill.
Do you have a quote that has led you in your journey?
Absolutely. Do and believe that which moves you towards your goals.
Awesome. What about one book that's had a big effect in your life?
The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell.
Very cool. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self based on your life experience, what would that be?
You have to develop a growth mindset. You have to know that your talent and intelligence can be improved through very artful practice.
Very cool. What entrepreneur do you admire most?
Elon Musk.
I got to tell you, man, there is nobody out there that compares to him right now. Seriously, the stuff he is doing is incredible.
I will agree with you there.
If your phone was ringing, and no, this is not a prank call, it's Webster's Dictionary, they say, Tom, you can redefine success. How would you define it?
I would, first of all, I can't wait for that call. It'd be really fun. I would define success really as how many skills can you acquire that have utility, and then put that utility to the test in service of something bigger than yourself. And so if you eke out, like, just as much of your potential as humanly possible, that to me is the juice. It's about really pushing the limits of what you're capable of.
Awesome. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you taking out the time. I know you're a super busy guy. If our listeners want to connect with you and learn more about what you're doing, where is the best place to do that?
At Tom Bilyeu. And you can find me everywhere. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me Instagram, Facebook. I am hyperactive socially. If you write to me in a public forum, DMs take about 6 months to get back to. I'm not kidding. But if you write to me at a public forum where everyone can learn from the answer, I'll get back to you within a couple of days for sure.
Awesome. Well, Tom Bilyeu, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today.
Thanks for having me on, man. And I had to do everything I could to resist asking you questions because your story is fascinating. I hope you've taken time to share it with your audience because it's intriguing.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.